Have you ever restored anything? Hello, this is Good Word, and I'm Dave Thomas, your host for this quarter. I want to say a couple of introductory things as we get started here, that week by week as we come over the radio and you listen to us, we are following a theme, a lesson, and it actually comes from a printed document. If any of you are interested in looking at it, you might Google Sabbath School, and you will find all kinds of links to a document called a Sabbath School Lesson Quarterly. If some of you are interested in seeing written material, you might try that. We're engaging in dialogue, and I'm very happy to have with me two conversation partners, Daryl Bigger, who's a professor in the School of Theology, and also Brant Berglund. Brant Berglund is a colleague who's a professor of New Testament. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me. Our lesson this week is entitled The Restoration of All Things, and I began with this question, have you ever restored anything? And I suppose we could all tell stories of how we have restored something, something big or something little. But in this particular case, the whole quarter, the next 13 weeks, we're looking at this question of restoration, particularly from a biblical perspective. And it seemed to me as I thought about this and as I read it over that whenever you talk about restoring something, you presume that it had a pristine or a better existence sometime prior. When you make something for the first time, you're not restoring it, you're making it. And so when we talk about restoration, and particularly from the biblical sense, what might be behind that? What should we keep in mind as we talk about restoration? Where did our story begin?
Story seems to begin, Dave, with the creation story in Genesis, where God created a world that was as perfect as we can imagine, where there didn't seem to be death or pain or crying. Everything was as we could only imagine.
In terms of goodness. In fact, that's an interesting story because after every episode of creation, a statement is made that God looked at it and it was good, and there's a summary statement that it was very good. And as you said, we don't read about death, we don't read about illness, we don't read about anything like that. And so we're left, Daryl, to think about what a pristine existence would have looked like, right?
And the way in which that first book in the arrangement of our books in the Bible was written reinforces the very fact you make, and that is that it was very good in contrast to what the world must have been like already by the time the author was writing this book.
Yeah.
So he was very anxious to make clear that there was a huge contrast between the beginnings and his present time.
So what do you think human beings back then were like compared to us? I mean, was their circumstance, obviously their circumstance was better than ours, not technologically, but how was it better than ours?
I read Genesis with an eye towards a word that's important to me, and that is it had a garden in it. And it seemed like that garden was a place where man did not have to toil for his food. It grew naturally, and he was able to pluck fruit off the tree to sustain himself. It wasn't until later that he had to work by the sweat of his brow. And that allowed, I can only imagine what that would open up for my life if I didn't have to work too hard to simply stay alive. What could I do? What could I explore? What could I learn and be?
And I'm fascinated living in the Walla Walla Valley where we are because I've never lived in a place where weeds do so well. You know, we get weeds that are 6 feet high even with no rain. But when I plant my tomatoes or my beans, I'm having to water them and weed them. Otherwise, I get nothing. So,
And there's ample of those noxious and poisonous things to last forever. I remember being shocked with a farmer here who told me one time that if you could cover up the ground and keep any weeds from drifting in, there are enough already in the ground to last for the next 100 years.
Seeds?
Yes.
No.
So there's no way to get rid of all of this terrible stuff.
No. See, and we assume that in Eden this was absent. This kind of stuff was absent, see?
Yeah.
Now, one of the things it mentions, and we're talking about restoration, so when you talk about restoration, you're always trying to imagine what it was like before it needed restoration. So the Bible talks about people being made in the image of God. Okay, any comments about that? Any thoughts that you would share about it? What does it mean for us to be, or at least our ancestral parents, biblically speaking, to have been made in the image of God? Do we still have that with us? Is that something that's been lost? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I connect that to something you said a little earlier, Brent, that if one had time to do more than simply sustain life, if you had time and energy to do as you wished, it would allow you to be immensely creative. To take what is and make it into something that is not yet. I have a rabbi friend who, while we were discussing the creation story one day, said that in his tradition, they believe that the end of creation week was not the end at all, but God was simply saying to the human race, now it's your turn to continue this creative work. And that certainly is part of the image of God in my mind, is the ability
to be creative. Okay.
And I find it interesting that God says, let us make man in our image, and he creates offspring, so to speak. All through the rest of the Bible, humanity is considered the sons of God, the daughters of God. And man, God puts a man and a woman in the garden and says, be fruitful and multiply. In that sense, our procreative abilities are also part of the image of God.
I've also wondered if it's hinting at a physical resemblance. You know, that's not a question we can answer because we don't know what God looks like, if he has a form at all. Although there are some places in the Bible where you talk about the hand of God, like Moses was hidden by the hand of God. But it'll be interesting on the other side of eternity to see. Obviously, humans cannot see God. But I wonder if somehow our form, the bodily form we take, has some resemblance. So if we began, if life here began in a pristine state, it is not that way now. And I think it doesn't take very long for people to figure out that there is something inherently wrong with life on Earth. So what happened?
We like to project blame on other things. And the story in Genesis does exactly that, that they were passing the buck, if you will, from one person to another, not wanting to take responsibility for themselves.
Yeah.
One thing that reminds me of is that we all have choices to make, and our first ancestors had those kinds of decisions available to them, and they exercised that freedom, and it had eternal results.
Far-ranging consequences, and not just, it seems like, in their own personal relationships, which you're alluding to by talking about responsibility, but also in the natural world, something ended up broken.
Yeah. You know, there's a technical theological term, if I can bring in here, the fall, F-A-L-L. Not the season, the fall, but the transition away from the original state in which the world and human beings were in to what we have today. And when I think about that, if you're talking about restoration, the idea of a fall is very, very significant. If there was never a fall, then there's nothing to restore. And I find it interesting. I find a lot of people today have a very different view of humans, because the biblical view is that we are not as well off as people as were our original ancestors, that they were not contaminated by well, they're not damaged by the fall, that sin, as the Bible calls it, had not, I almost want to use the word infected them, you know. And but we don't have that circumstance, that our lives are broken. And it is a sobering thing to realize that there is a brokenness that you cannot fix. I remember when that realization dawned on me as a young man. I was trying to do some things very rightly and was failing. And the thought struck me that I'm not, you know, there's something wrong with me. And so as we look at the lessons for the quarter, this is kind of the story that's in the background, that there was a pristine beginning. We have lost that, and now God is working to restore that, and very interestingly is inviting humans not only into the process of restoration but to participate in the restoration of others and even the planet. Does that do anything for you?
I find that to be ironic, considering that much of the secular world today considers that there was no fall, but actually we are on a trajectory that is positive, that through the stages of evolution, the world's getting better. But we can join in with those who believe that we should make a better world. I think Christians should be at the forefront of helping to improve both society and culture and my own life and my own role in this world.
Yeah. And for me, I like that very much. And for me, it also suggests some immensely positive things about God himself. Even though there was a significant change in the relationship between human beings and God, God didn't desert us, didn't chase us away, didn't exclude us, but wants us to be part of his restoration plan. That's a phenomenal idea.
And see, to me, it's also interesting that this actually has two points of focus. One is an individual focus. In other words, you and I are invited to a process of restoration in our own lives. But we're also invited to participate in assisting God, if I can put it that way, in the restoration of other human beings and even, in a sense, the restoration of our planet. Okay? And, Brent, you said something that intrigued me. That we are not pristine. That people today think that the self is pristine, but when you look around the planet, our pristineness doesn't seem to shine too brightly. That there is as one friend of mine said, a certain cussedness about humans that seems to be deeply embedded.
Seems so.
And you know, where arrogance and self-sufficiency grows, those things seem to be bigger. Of course, one of the questions we run into here is human beings live in communities and Christians live in communities that are called churches. And I don't know, in the closing minutes of this, any thoughts about what the church might do to help with restoration?
I think the first thing the church ought to be, if it claims to be a community where God is at work, then it ought to be reflecting at least the initial stages of that growth and that restoration. The church ought to be somewhat different if it's being changed back into the image of God.
Yeah, yeah.
And an openness toward one another, like God had an openness toward us, it would, I would think, be part of that environment.
And a comforting thing is that the Bible is very clear that this process of restoration is not something we can engineer on our own. That there is a power and an incentive that comes from being deferential and dependent on God, inviting God into our lives to empower and can I use the word engineer change, not in a bad way. None of it, though, without our choice and our involvement. So. Well, Daryl and Brent, we are kind of running out of time here. We thank you for these comments on the first time together. We look forward to meeting again. My thanks to you and to David Olson, to our engineer, and my thanks to you for listening to The Good Word. I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.